Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister John Key is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, is it Robbie Kaiviti?
Robbie Kaiviti, indeed, thank you, Vinny. Means native, actually.
Indeed. Well, Robbie, would you just elaborate a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Love the intro first, Vinny. Love the music, mate. Lovely to catch up with you finally. Absolutely. I've been dying to bang into you at some point. My name's Robbie Kaiviti. I'm the leader of the New Zealand People's Mandate Party here in New Zealand, a newly formed party, and we're something with a little bit of a difference. NZPMP is the only party that's closely aligned itself to the Occupy movement, the Robin Hood movement, and the 350 movement. Your turn.
All right. Well, let's explain those kind of things as to how you indeed got into them.
Oh, fair enough. NZPMP has, myself personally, I've been around in politics a very long time now, at the blunt end of politics, really. I've been involved in community issues now here in New Zealand for a great many years. And the party was simply formed on the basis that we've realised that if we really want the kind of change that people are calling for in the Occupy movement, then the only thing we can really do to assist that change would be to try and change the system from within. So that means that NZPMP will be standing at the next election. But if we're successful, we want to introduce a completely new model for our governance here in New Zealand.
What is the new governance model that you propose?
Okay, what we're basically proposing is very simply this, that the people of this country certainly deserve to have a voice in government, so what we'd like to do is we'd like to put in place the systems that allow that to give people very direct control over their own governance. There's a number of ways of achieving that. We, as a party, already engage with the people on a very intimate level. And that sort of thing needs to continue inside government. We have to get away beyond this electorate system and submission system that we have. People need to have a much greater, or take a much greater responsibility in their own governance than they are. It's just not good enough to turn up on voting day, put a couple of ticks in a box, and then race off and bitch about what the country's doing for the next 3 years. Our people actually need to take responsibility for their own governance if they genuinely want the change that they say they want. The model is actually based around a Melanesian principle. It's called the Great Circle, where Parliament isn't structured at all the way it is now. It's based on
like a beehive controlled by a queen.
that's very aptly put, actually, Vinny. I've got some lingering doubts about poor old John there, to be quite honest. But no, the queen bee is absolutely about right. What we want to do is we basically want to restructure Parliament in a very very radical kind of way. The Melanesian Great Circle system is based very simply on the circle principle where, you see this in villages. This is where I first learned about the Great Circle, was sitting in the the company of my own family at Christmas time and asking my grandfather, why does everybody sit in the circle? And he explained it simply as this, that everybody sits in a circle and ideas are exchanged. And this is how young people get their education, actually, is you float into these circles. Every now and then one great old ham-hocked aunt would grab you and pull you into this wonderful circle and smother you with Fijian kisses, which are quite unpleasant, actually. And you would get...
Are they anything like... Are they Fijian kisses anything like the Glasgow kiss?
No. They're a good deal more affectionate, but unfortunately very sloppy and not something a young chap really wants in front of his mates. But you would get your education this way. There was nothing left out. You'd learn about life and love by listening and by receiving these little lessons as your day sort of progressed.
And what happens when the schools are banned hugging like they have now?
Oh, good Lord, I know. You know, we're becoming a... we sort of have a system now where we have this forced lack of affection. It bothers me entirely, you know, because I come from a place that's very loving, it's very inclusive, it draws you in and hugs you all the time. And I really don't understand that kind of mentality, and to be honest, I don't want to.
It's probably because you're not a deranged psychopath. You actually have empathy for other people.
Well, I don't know where it comes from. I come from a strange place, really. My father is Danish Nordic stock, so he gave me my looks. And my mother's a Belle of Fiji, so she gave me my culture. But so I have this curious world I live in where I float between the Pākehā world and the Melanesian world and a whole lot of others besides, because we're such a multicultural family. And that kind of brings me down to New Zealand, really. I see New Zealand the same way. We're a multicultural family here. And the bicultural conversation, as it's been happening in this country for the past couple of hundred years, well, we've kind of got to get away from that because we've never been a bicultural country. We've been a multicultural country for a very, very long time now.
Now, going back to governance, the Great Circle, how does it work in Parliament?
Well, there's no sides in a circle, Vinny, so it would be that if NZPMP was successful in gaining the government seats, you would well find that we would take the other parties into our caucus directly to make a direct contribution. The way the model is created, I mean, you avoid certain things. You avoid this kind of bickering that goes on in Parliament, because in the Great Circle it's quite impolite to do that. People get their turn to speak. This infighting that goes on between parties simply wouldn't exist. It wouldn't be allowed to exist, because it would be incumbent on all the parties to come to an agreement over those important issues. If they can't do that, then there would be consequences. It leads one to start asking the hard questions of all of the parties. If you're not going to put yourself in a position where you're cooperating, then perhaps it's time to go to the people over an important issue and have a referendum and let the people decide.
So let me get this straight. Under that form of government, any backwards politician who won't be convinced of anything, despite all the evidence being put out, yet instead you have the people's say instead of his.
That's correct. That's very basically, that's what would happen. I call it the Great Circle. The Swiss use a very similar system. They've been using it very successfully for years, where they have a system of binding referendum on important social issues. So, yes, if we got to that point where a certain politician is just prefers to just stick his head or her head in the mud and just simply not cooperate, there would be consequences for that politician. One of the things our model has built into it is that we actually have two prime ministers. The position of deputy prime minister would simply cease to exist. We would have two prime ministers. One would have day-to-day control over government, as the Prime Minister does now, in that very traditional sense. But the other Prime Minister of equal seniority would be the people's representative in Parliament, and that person would run a new office called the People's Advocacy Office, and it would cover all of those social services within the social services sphere, so that people have very direct conversation with government. They can very direct their problems, and that person's job and that department's job is to make sure that the people are served. At the moment, we've got a case of government rules and not a case of government serves, and we need to get away from that.
How many laws are being passed per day exactly? I heard it was two a day since the National Party came into power.
Somebody did a little, they worked it out. They worked out that if you place the pages of law on top of each other, the pile reaches 17 metres. And it's got to a point where...
Holy cow. How much control over a population can you fit into a 17-metre spined book?
Well, this is a... And if you start reading tomorrow, Vinny, you'd be going until you're well past, eh? We can't afford to go on creating ridiculous law. Some of the laws that have been passed lately just absolutely amaze me. We've got the Search and Surveillance Bill. Oh, lordy, lordy, what can I say about the Search and Surveillance Bill? It's the most serious attack on New Zealanders' rights and freedoms in our entire political history. It's a law that seeks to control. It creates a true police surveillance state here in this country. And one has to simply ask the question, what for? Who are they protecting us from? Because I'm darned if I've seen any terrorists coming through Mungaree Airport just lately. And I even those guys, the police out there, I wish they'd take their Glocks off them, because if it ever does happen, there's going to be a massacre if ever one of those guys decides to pull his gun. No, honestly, we're just not threatened here. The reality is our security requirements haven't changed since the 1950s. With one proviso, things have actually got better for New Zealand in terms of our security, because we're not under the old Cold War. So our security requirements haven't changed, and yet they keep pouncing on us and driving these new laws, which are all based on control of the populace. That's all they're for.
It's Agenda 21 protocol. They're taken over. In fact, John Key once said in a press conference that what he's doing is changing a lot of little things all over the place instead of any big things that would get people's attention up. And at the end of it, you accomplish quite a lot.
Well, in the end, he has accomplished quite a lot. If I was John Key, I would be particularly happy with what I've managed to accomplish. But the things that he has accomplished are so corrosive to the society that, frankly, all I can say is I think the guy is borderline criminal culpable, if you want my opinion. He's sitting right there on the very edge of doing some things that could be seen to be extremely wrong.
What do you expect? And, he used to be a derivatives trader for a major US corporate bank that has shares in the Federal Reserve and finances both parties in the States.
he's a strange animal. All corporate beasts are basically a strange animal. John, I don't know. When I look at the man's eyes, you know, there have been times in this country where things have happened, circumstances that should require from a Prime Minister great emotion. And when I look at John Key's eyes, when he's talking about the deaths of some troops in Afghanistan, or when he's talking about the Pike River miners, I look at the guy and I see the smile and I look at his eyes and I think, your eyes are dead, mate. You're absolutely flipping dead. There's just nothing going on. And when you hear him talk about these matters that should demand great passion, he's very matter-of-fact. You know what I mean, Vinny? You've seen the same eyes as I have. There's just nothing going on.
I have a poster of John Key, a not-wanted poster of John Key, and it's on my wall. And in fact, there's two of them. Like, so on either side of my wall, there's John Key staring back at me all day long, you know, His eyes follow you wherever you go, and they're dead. You're quite right.
Why would you want to punish yourself like that, Vinny? You know, that's a bit worrying too, mate. I'd take those posters down, I would.
Know thy enemy.
Know thy enemy. Goodness gracious, I think we all know thy enemy a little bit too well by now. We've had enough.
Obviously, we don't know them well enough because we've not beaten them yet.
Well, people talk about all sorts of things. I've heard talk about peaceful revolution. I've heard talk about armed revolution in this country. And I have to say that the easiest way to revolution in this country is come voting day, stick some ticks in the right boxes. Get rid of these has-been parties. One has to consider simply this. Labour and National have had at it now for more than three decades. 30-odd years they've been going flat out at this country with this neoliberal agenda of theirs. It's failed. It's a failed experiment. In terms of how it's impacted on the people, it's a completely failed ideology. Get rid of the darn thing. We don't want it anymore. And people have become upset. They want change. They desperately want change, but they don't really know how to get it. And this is why you get these discussions about, oh, we should have a revolution, and oh, we should do this, and oh, we should do that. No, people need to start giving some thought to voting for something different. Labour and National duopoly, that's what it's been for decades now, a duopoly. We've had National Labour governments all the way through. People need to start thinking about voting another way. Now, NZP, PMP gives people another choice. I would be very grateful if people would have a look at us and decide for themselves whether we're a way to go. But in the end, under MMP, you get two votes. Why not try something new? And if you're that hard about it, well, support your old party if that's what you really must do. MMP allows you to do that.
I remember speaking to Hone Harawira about how much effectiveness is our protesting and even his attempts in Parliament to get important issues sussed. He says, oh, this bugger all chance. And that's the system. That's the system we currently have, and it desperately, desperately needs to be frickin' changed. Hey, anything will do. As long as it's nothing like what we've got now, I think that's about right. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Robbie Clivetti.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Hey,
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Robbie Clivetti. Is there a website for the PMP?
Well,
I was just thinking about yesterday. I think the Associate Health Minister, Mr. Peter Dunn, the Honourable Honourable Peter Dunn. stood down because he doesn't have 500 people in order to make a party. So legally, he can't stay there in Parliament. And I've been trying to get rid of this guy for oh so many years for habitually being the pin in the government that says, if you want my support in my party, you have to not ever, ever talk about cannabis legalization of any kind. Even though we've had like heaps of commissions on it, and they all said the exact same thing, and now he's gone.
But well, he's a twitching body at the moment, Vinny. Let's put it that way. He's still there, kinda. Peter, what can I say about Peter? What worries me about Peter is he's come out and he said that he's made a few hairy judgments of late. Now, that really bothers me. This guy is, as you say, the linchpin of this government. Here he is. He sits there and he says, well, I've made a few hairy judgments lately. How many of these hairy judgments has he actually made? And on what particularly? I'd love to know.
Probably hairy cannabis buds.
Oh, hairy cannabis buds. You know, the only person I think who has reefer madness in this country is bloody Peter Dunne, honestly. Oops. Sorry about that. Is dear old Peter. He's absolutely maniacal about it. I look at this issue over synthetic cannabis, and it does concern me greatly. It bothers me entirely that these synthetics are on the market. But let's face it, if cannabis was legalised, end of problem. They wouldn't be there. There'd be no market. It's as simple as that.
Who the hell wants an artificial alternative when they can have the real thing and grow it themselves, incidentally?
I think it's well to remember that Peter Dunne is or was also the Minister of Revenue. Synthetics, government's collecting tax on those things, like it or not. That's what they're doing. They just don't like to talk about that very much. And the fact is that there are synthetic companies who produce these synthetics that have said that they're willing to go through these testing stages to get their products into the shops again in a legal form. And Peter has said, go for it. But let's face it, government makes to stand stands to make a buck out of that. There will be a system that licenses those products and government will make a killing. Then at the other end, government will make a killing from GST on those products, because as long as cannabis remains illegal, people will still buy the synthetic product. Make cannabis legal. It's an easy fix. But making cannabis legal is an easy fix in a lot of ways for a lot of things.
If used properly, just cannabis and hemp, you know, with all the medical construction, the biofuels and car paneling, all the kind of 50,000 different products you can do, you could solve nearly every single one of the country's problems, even public ignorance.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, mate. Look, I don't know what the problem is with government's thinking. I can't quite fathom why our two main parties just won't bite the bullet. But I think it comes down to simply this. They've positioned themselves middle ground, and it comes down to simply not having the guts. It would be much easier for a new party to come along and legalise cannabis. Legalise cannabis for medical use, legalise cannabis for personal recreational use, and get into all of these other wonderful initiatives that would benefit this country. You talk about hemp. What have we got? Cannabis produces four times more fibre per acre than a tree does.
And the paper lasts four times as long as well. The Gutenberg Bible was written on hemp paper. It's the reason it's still in such good condition.
Exactly. You know, it just makes sense, Vinny, and I think that's what it actually comes down to. People are asking, why won't Labor do this and why won't National do that? It comes down purely to a question of guts. They have to appeal to the way they've positioned themselves, which is middle ground. But actually, if somebody just took the brave step, that middle ground would see the benefits and come along for the ride eventually.
Well, I do believe it's about guts entirely. But also what's happened now, and this is the reason why I don't like the national elections per se, is because for one voice in one region of the country to spread that voice over the entire nation, it requires extensive broadcasting coverage. It's really the only way to do it, as well as a large fanfare, touring, kissing of babies, and so on and so forth. This whole campaign rigmarole, and I don't like the idea of that whatsoever. Because you've ever had a conversation with somebody, Robbie, and the conversation lasts a minute, and you think to yourself, you know what? I've got lots of people that I have to talk to. I really can't develop a relationship with anybody. under those kind of conditions, except for the people that I'm working with.
I know where you're going. The issue of how our campaigns are run in this country causes us considerable concern. They're becoming more and more kind of Americanized, I guess, where it's the money that counts. Also, New Zealand politics, because we're a very small country, and I understand this perfectly, it's very personality-based. People tend to vote on personality rather than policy in this country. I mean, it's quite a bizarre situation. We can actually have people in this country who can dislike a government incredibly, but they will keep on voting for that party no matter what. There's this kind of blind loyalty system that goes on. And it particularly becomes worse when people actually sign up to a political party and they pay over a fee. At that point, you become a completely mindless follower, basically.
Yeah, I've spoken to many of these people who follow these, and they can't even answer basic questions about their party or the person they're voting for or their policy of any kind, yet they're out there spending hours and hours waving a sign with these people.
Well, exactly that. And if you ask some of the politicians, as I did the other day, a hairy question, they can't answer them either or don't want to.
A sudden case of political amnesia.
Yes. We've got a very forgetful bunch of politicians in this country. They don't seem to remember anything when it comes down to anything important, unfortunately. But that's
what you call somebody who's a child of America and Polynesia, an amnesian.
I'll use that one. Look, mate, there has to be change in this country. That's where it's going. People want that change. They can smell it in the air, but they actually need to have the courage to get out there on voting day and vote for it. Now, there are alternative parties. We're one. I'll mention Mana for a moment. I actually like old Honey. I think Honey's a valuable kind of guy in Parliament because he says the dirty things. And we need people
like white mother fracker.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. But the point is you have to have people who challenge. And Honey is one of those characters. Winston Peters is another one of those kinds of characters. You know, years ago they talked about Winston becoming Prime Minister, and I thought, oh, good Lord, no, please, because the guy is not Prime Minister material. He's very divisive. But that's fine. That's where his talent lies. He can smell an issue, and he can get stuck into it. And I admire Winston for that. So we need
he's like a watchdog, you know. He'd be like a good Minister of Internal Securities or something like that, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Which I think what we'll do, talking about security, is we'll just move on for a bit here, Vinny. I'd like to talk about secrecy in government. I've become pretty convinced. I'm ex-military myself, and I've become pretty convinced over a long period of years that many of the secrets we keep are completely unnecessary. We keep them more because it's boys playing secret squirrel than anything else. There's this perceived need to keep secrets rather than any real requirement to keep them. We talk about conspiracy. Conspiracy finds a very hard place to feel comfortable where there is no secrets. NZPMP has developed a policy now. We'd simply like to get rid of secrecy in government. We don't think it's a necessary thing. I learned a long time ago in my career that the most successful secret service that ever existed in Earth's history was actually the Polish through the Cold War, because they had no secrets. They gave them away to anybody who wanted them. So Poland never actually, through that whole Cold War period, never actually came under any security threat because they simply had no secrets. If you wanted a secret, you could ring up the Polish Secret Service and say, what's going on in Botswana? I'd be very happy to tell you, thank you. It was as simple as that. these secrets are so bizarrely unnecessary, and it creates a whole new industry, the secrets industry. We've got two new industries in New Zealand and globally, actually. We've got the ever-growing security services that apparently look after us for every tiny little thing. They save us from these invented foes that exist all over the planet. And apparently it has to be Al-Qaeda, it has to be. It just has to be them. No matter what happens, it has to be them. Al-Qaeda, in fact, they're an invention. There is or has never actually been an organised Al-Qaeda organisation. It just simply never existed until George W. came along and created the darn thing for us so that we had an enemy we could fight. And they did fight them poor sods. They fought these poor sods in Afghanistan, and they fought these poor sods in Iraq. But they were just, on the whole, pretty ordinary folk. I know what sort of attitude I would take here if I'm living here in New Zealand. If some invading force came to this country, they could expect some problems from me. And it's those. Same perceptions that you have in these other countries. These security services, it's a brand new industry, and they only exist to protect us from these invented foes. We've got, even here in New Zealand, we see examples of this. We've got the Aviation Security Service, which on the whole, they do a good job for what they do. But basically, I'm not meaning to be mean to the guys. They're fairly unnecessary. We would really love to get rid of secrecy in government. We don't think that, apart from ongoing operational matters, we don't think there's much need to keep secrets at all. And we think that the government secret files should be opened for public scrutiny. If they're over 5 years old, that's it. Open the books. I'm picking, though, Vinnie, if that we were successful in getting into government, we'd find some awfully horrid secrets in those books, I truly do. And I think we would have to start looking at matters of criminal culpability, actually. And I think that's also a reason why we keep secrets, is because certain people don't want certain things to come to light. Because if they did, they've got a problem.
Secrecy is very valuable in order to conceal your scumbaggery.
Well, that's about where it is. Look, there are issues over some of the business dealings of John Key. They definitely beg the question, what's been going on here, John? What have you really been up to? There's questions over John Banks and what he's been up to. We know that John Banks has had shares in various companies, this whole debacle over teachers' pays and goodness knows what. John Banks is in it up to his neck, but these things are cleverly hidden. Well, not so cleverly hidden at times, but nevertheless, they are hidden. I think we could, if we were to really put John Banks under scrutiny, I think he could find himself in a lot of bother. I think a lot of politicians could find themselves in a lot of bother over different things they've done. Certainly, over my in my service, there were secrets that I came across that astounded me. Truly, they astounded me. We had situations here in New Zealand where our services have basically committed acts of mutiny against our people and our government, and they've gotten away with it.
Yeah, I think this is the long, sad lesson of history, is that people come in because and they seize power because ordinary, good, decent people don't really want power and control over other people. You ever notice that? They want other people to get on with their lives. But some people don't like that idea and would prefer to control your lives for you. And they wind up going into the power positions. Straightforward. We'll be right back after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen. I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is Robbie Kaiviti, and we've got him for one more segment before we bring on another guest from New Zealand, incidentally talking about racial issues in New Zealand. And we mentioned biculturalism before. Did you know that English is not even an official language of New Zealand?
Well, I didn't actually know that, Vinnie, to be quite honest, but that's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
We have two official languages, Māori and Sign Language, and English is not on that list as one of the official languages. What?
Yeah, strange. Look. One of the things I love most about living in New Zealand, and truly it just gets me every time, I can walk down Queen Street, mate, and in the course of an hour, I can meet people from every corner of the globe, every religion and every political persuasion. And I think that's one of the most wonderful things, one of the most wonderful features of this country. That diversity enriches us, absolutely enriches us. And why we can't embrace that more than we have, I'm a little bit confused, because I come from a multicultural background myself.
Maybe the problem with diversity is that it's very difficult to unite people against a common enemy.
Well, I think people do unite around nationhood. I don't particularly want to talk about the Israelis, but if we look at Israel, it is a multicultural country, and it is certainly a country that has united around nationhood. This is a country with people coming from all sorts of places, and they've managed to do that. Unfortunately, they've got some other problems, which I don't want to get into. But, I think there's lots of examples around the world of multicultural countries managing to unite. I think a very bad example of a multicultural nation is UK. I think they failed dismally in managing to bring together their people under that sort of one nation kind of concept. They've got some shocking problems over there. And I feel sad for the country, because it's all going to blow up in a rather unpleasant sort of way.
I heard a statistic out of the Daily Mail, I think, or it might have been the Telegraph. There's certain schools in London where 8 out of 10 children, English is their second language.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I was in Britain a while back, and I was amazed walking through one or two schools that all the signage in the school was in everything but English. There was Arabic was the preferred language for signage in one of the schools that I went to, and I thought it was kind of bizarre. I was waiting for a bus in Piccadilly Circus, and I didn't realise that you had to have the right change to get on the bus. And this rather lovely old London girl came up to me and said, "You know, you got to have the right money, son, you know." And she launched into this incredible tirade about how she felt that she was a stranger in her own land. And then she looked at me smiling. She pressed a few coins into my hand, the dear old thing, and said, "Oh, it's lovely to meet somebody like you who's not a foreigner, you know?" And I said, "I come from New Zealand, dear, you know? I'm a colonial." And she said, "Oh, you know what I mean." Well, to some degree, this kind of impressed on me all of the problems that that Britain has, and I came away from that very small experience, and I said to my partner at the time, I said, "Britain's in for a lot of trouble. It's going to happen." And sure as darn, that's exactly where Britain's going at the moment. They've got some awful problems, and I don't know how they're going to work them out. But in terms of this,
throughout history, I think mass migrations of foreign cultures into other countries has always resulted in a massive wave of racism and infighting in those countries. And I think this is being done deliberately so that everybody's fighting with each other instead of fighting the beast that serves the same master.
You don't think that humans are just naturally racist, to be quite honest?
We actually are. We tend to stick with our own racial groups, and those ones that have a monoculture, countries around the world have virtually no racism, because when you see a foreigner, it's like, oh, as a foreigner, you know, it's kind of like novel. It's when it's this, I don't know what the proportion is or whatever, but ignorance starts to spread as soon as fear of the outsider sets in. It's unavoidable.
Well, you're absolutely right. And the old propaganda machine starts to work, doesn't it? People dislike differences in others. And people go about this process of creating a false propaganda that they present to others. And you know, the world is fundamentally mindless. I read a statistic a while back that kind of really bothered me, actually, that the average IQ of the planet is 78. You know, that's next to being a vegetable, to be quite honest. There just seems to be this mindlessness. Basically, you can, so long as you have some sort of authority behind you, you can basically tell the people anything. And government uses this technique devastatingly. They're engaged in this kind of propaganda war against our most disadvantaged and disenfranchised in this country. You know, they've told us that the problem with this country is the unemployed. The problem with this country is the solo parents. The problem with this country is damned old folks, you know? They've actually started to try and tell us now that the problem with New Zealand is our pensioners. We don't have enough money for our pensioners. New Zealand is in a wonderful position. We're a very small country, Vinny, and that actually advantages us. We need to get away from this growth at any cost kind of mentality that we have. There is great advantages in being a small country. What we actually need to do, if you want to look at the issue of pensions, is we need to actually ask New Zealanders to have more children, because if you want to pay for old age pensions, you need a younger crop of people coming along who are going to eventually go into the workforce and facilitate that. So we actually need to be, to put it very bluntly, we need to be asking New Zealanders to breed. But now here's the trick. If you're going to do that, you have to put families in a position where one person out of that couple can actually stay at home and do some child raising. If you look at our youth problems in this country, it comes down to, you know, it seems very complex, but actually the answers are quite simple. We have a lot of youth problems in this country, but what it really comes down to is simply this: there's nobody at home. We've got a system now that requires that a couple, well, both of them have to be working. You've got to be working to make your way in this life, because you need all these things, apparently. But what this country actually needs is good, solid families. And the way to get good, solid families, I don't want to say to go back to a kind of a traditional model, but in some ways we actually do. We have to put families in a position where when you do a fair day's work, you get a fair day's pay, and that enables you to look after your family in a reasonable sort of a lifestyle, a reasonable sort of lifestyle. And one parent needs to be at home. I don't care who that parent is. I don't care whether it's the guy or whether it's the lady of the family. I really don't give a darn. That's entirely up to them. But we've got to get back to a situation where people earn enough to simply be able to look after their families in a reasonable manner, and that they are able to have that parental supervisory kind of role over their children.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I was just thinking about this. You know how you get a maternity leave, like this statutory amounts that the companies have to pay to a woman when she's pregnant, so that she can have like a 6 months to get over the pregnancy and take the child through its immediate infancy. You know, maybe you could extend that for other people as well for up to 5 years. I don't know, but that's just putting more rules and regulations. It'd just be much simpler if people were paid more, taxed less, so that they could actually afford to buy a home and take care of their freaking families in it and feed them.
That's exactly right. There's this rhetoric around, you know, higher wages, this will take care of all our problems. But actually, higher wages don't take care of our problems at all. Every time people get pay rises across the board, inevitably what happens is inflation goes up, the cost of living goes up. So you end up, if you look historically, you actually end up slightly worse off. Every time you get a pay increase across the board in this country, you tend to actually end up historically worse off. So pay rises is not the answer. That has to be done in conjunction with something else. We have to drive down the cost of living.
Indeed. Well, Robbie, we don't have enough time to get into all of these sorts of issues with you. I'm sure we could talk all day. And thank you very much for coming on the show with me, mate.
Thank you, Vinny. It's been very enjoyable, and I'll catch up with you for a drink sometime, I think.
All right. Cheers, mate. Some description of Glen Eden Pub, I guess.
Oh, I guess. You have a great day, mate.
You, mate. Cheers.
Thanks, finally. Bye now.
All right. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the commercial break, and we'll be bringing on a lovely man by the name of Joe Trindle, who also incidentally was in the military, and we are going to be talking about New Zealand's bicultural sort of treaty kind of prospectimic things. I'm not 100% sure, but we'll find out, won't we? Back in a minute.